The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the March 2019 issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. We're going to begin on page 16, and we have two stories. This is still in the warm-up section. We have a picture of Justin Abdulkader, Red Wing, growing up in Michigan. Justin Abdulkader wanted to play hockey in Detroit. Now that his dream has come true, he's turned his life into a children's book in which he shares his story of hard work plus a little luck. Veteran Red Wings forward Justin Abdulkader didn't just wake up one morning and decide to write a children's book. The idea originated with Red Wings for Reading, a program in which Abdulkader picks books for local elementary kids to read. One of the books he came across was The Little Linebacker, an illustrated semi-autobiography by former Detroit Lions linebacker Stephen Tulloch. Inspired, Abdulkader figured he would give it a try. "I thought that was something I could do," he says. "I have a really unique story to tell. I thought it was a natural fit." Published in October, shortly after the 32-year-old began his 10th NHL season, Shoot for the Goal begins with Justin, a boy from Muskegon, Michigan, receiving a Red Wings jersey for his 5th birthday and dreaming of one day playing for the team. The winger was hands-on in the process of making the book, which he did with his wife, Julie. He pored over old photographs, including one taken the first time he skated on Muskrat Lake, to ensure that the illustrations were realistic. He also paid close attention to every little detail. "The illustrator wasn't a big hockey fan," Abdulkader says. "We had to make sure she had the players holding the stick right. I was sending things back and forth, emailing pictures." Abdulkader enjoyed the process so much, from storyboarding ideas with his publisher to revising and editing with his wife, that he's not ready to stop. "Gosh, we even laugh. Maybe we'll have to come up with a book number two." Out of this world. Still on page 16. Golden State star Steph Curry made headlines in December when he said on a podcast that he didn't think astronauts had actually landed on the moon in 1969. He later said that he was only joking, but he took it upon himself to demonstrate the importance of being serious about science. First, he interviewed astronaut Scott Kelly. Then the MVP wore a pair of custom-made moon-themed Curry 6 shoes for the Warriors' January 3rd game. Appropriately enough, the game was against the Houston Rockets. Curry autographed the shoes and auctioned them off to raise money for STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math programs. The shoes brought in $58,100. Sound off. What's your favorite dessert? Page 17. "I don't eat them anymore, but I used to eat a lot of Oreo cookies. Cookies and milk, or maybe with soft serve ice cream, was always good. If I wasn't given them, I could usually find my way to the top of the cupboards and get them. But I'd always make sure to leave some for the next time." This is John Tavares, Toronto Maple Leafs Center. Strawberry $1 million pie. "I have it every chance I get. The best place to get it is actually in my kitchen, made by me. The ingredients are Cool Whip, strawberries, sweetened condensed milk, graham cracker crust, and lemon. I try to make it every chance I get when I'm home." This is Dawana Bonner, Phoenix Mercury Forward. And finally we have, "Well, my mom's banana pudding is hands down my favorite dessert. I had it for the first time as a kid, and she makes it for me every time I come back home. She throws in extra vanilla wafers and adds whipped cream on top, so it's customized just for me. It was my Nana's recipe first, and she later passed it on to my mom. It's definitely my cheat meal." Shelby Miller, Texas Rangers Pitcher. Next we have on page 18, Jack Eichel. This is Prime Time. Has a picture of Jack on his skates looked like he's just ready to hammer in a goal. His team is Buffalo Sabres. His position is center. Spotlight. Playing at an MVP level, the high-scoring Massachusetts native has put his franchise in the city of Buffalo on his back, and he sees even greater things to come. Sitting down his turkey burger, Jack Eichel looked out the windows of a downtown Buffalo restaurant and once again imagined the future. He saw the surrounding Riverside area choked with game day traffic, blue and white Sabres jerseys spilling toward KeyBank Center beneath in an early summer sky. He pictured live music blaring and cameras panning overhead, broadcasting crowd shots to a national audience. He visualized it because that is how he has always pursued his goals. Growing up in North Chelmsford, Massachusetts, Eichel would track articles from local athletes receiving college scholarships to the walls of his family's basement. It gave him extra motivation while cranking out squats before middle school. Even while the 2015 draft was years away, the background image of his iPod touch was a picture mosaic of more highly regarded players. Among them was the only one who would actually get picked ahead of him, Edmonton's Connor McDavid. He also programmed the device to deliver a daily morning reminder. How bad do you want to make the NHL? Now that Eichel is there, not to mention captaining the Sabres at the age 22, playing at an MVP level and generally realizing his potential as the savior for one of the pro sport's most woebegone cities, he is singularly focused on an even higher goal. Constantly thinking about what it would be like, he said, nodding toward the waterfront, first of all, to be in the playoffs. Then to get a good run going would be awesome. Awesome. Eichel uses that word a lot these days. It was awesome living with his parents, Bob and Ann, last summer for the first time since leaving Boston University after his freshman year. It was awesome when Buffalo won the 2018 draft lottery, which would bring aboard dynamo 18-year-old Swedish defenseman Rasmus Dahlin. Of course, the most awesome thing lately is the love Eichel has felt in Buffalo now that its hockey team has become relevant again. Fervor peaked as the Sabres reeled off 10 straight victories from November 8th through the November 27th, tying a franchise record. Everyone's going out of their way to stop you and tell you how proud they are, Eichel says. Even when things were bad, I really credit this city for being patient. After finishing 23rd, 26th, and 31st in the 3 years since Eichel arrived, the Sabres drew boos following the first period of their season-opening shutout loss to Boston. Okay, so maybe not that patient. Since then, though, Buffalo has been the league's biggest surprise and in position to make the playoffs for the first time since 2010-2011. We have a lot of great stories going on with our team right now, General Manager Jason Buttrill says, but they usually start with Jack, franchise savior. And where does Eichel's story in Buffalo begin? On a $157-foot, $35 million luxury yacht with four-deck elevator service and a spa jacuzzi. It was a Saturday in late June 2015, the night after the Sabres picked Eichel. The boat, which belongs to Sabre owners Terry and Kim Pegula, was docked in the harbor of Boca Raton, Florida. The Pegulas were hosting Eichel's family and representatives for a celebrity dinner. A very welcoming tone, Agent Peter Fish says. That is what was serious. We think you're the guy who's going to help us win. More than that, Tara Pringala understands the urgency. A long-time season ticket holder before he bought the Sabres in February 2011, Pegula was moved to tears at the mere sight of legendary center Gilbert Perrault at the press conference. And so it is not without serious regard for history that he includes Eichel in the same breath as the Hall of Famer. The team was new then, and it came on rather fast with Perrault as one of the cornerstones, Pegula says. And now we're rising again. The reason for his optimism? as he told his wife whenever she expressed concern over the last 3 years. "Hey, don't worry. We've got Jack." Relative to McDavid, Eichel exhibits a subtler version of an on-ice superstardom. He can still twist ankles with toe drags, like how he undressed Capitals defenseman Dmitry Orlov before scoring his second goal in a 4-3 shootout loss against the defending Stanley Cup champs on December 15th. But the 6'2", 200-pound Eichel also employs a remarkably efficient stride, keeping his upper body upright and knees bent deep, pumping his long arms. Like Mario Lemieux, says winger and lineman Jason Ponville, he's kind of effortless. You don't think he's going fast, but he can fly. At his best, Eichel is a one-man breakout factory. He finishes pucks from scrums, weaves past back checkers with those long gallops, and wards away pressure with his raw strength. He's an avatar for the modern-day two-way NHL centerman. "As well-rounded a player as I've ever seen," says Sabres defenseman Zach Bogosian, a 11-year vet. "You can't say one bad thing about his game." Out in front. For Eichel, leading on the ice has never been an issue. Since coming to Buffalo, he has had a hand in 31.4% of the team's goals. "He has such an impact on our team," Botterill says. "They feed off his energy. In the past, this cut both ways. Unfamiliar with chronic losing, Eichel often let his body language do the talking. When hockey's good, I'm probably a better person," he says. "When hockey's bad, I'm a little bit bitter. But I've learned. It's important to worry about being a good teammate, making sure your relationships stay strong through poor times." Since becoming captain in October 3rd, Eichel has taken a hands-on approach. He treated the team to dinner in Nashville and spent 10 minutes offering tips on one-timers to Dahlin at practice after the rookie mishit several in a game against Los Angeles. By signing an 8-year, $80 million contract in October 2017, Eichel made his big commitment to Buffalo. "I'm emotionally invested," he says, "and between new arrivals like Dahlin, goalie Carter Hutton, and twinkle-toed left winger Jeff Skinner, Eichel is surrounded by more talent than ever. Every rebuilding outfit must deal with growing pains, but there are a few games when Buffalo has to worry. After all, they've got Jack." And shows here a picture here on page 20. Awesome guys, Eichel and his Buffalo teammates have had a lot to celebrate so far as the Sabres look playoff bound for the first time in 8 years. Classmates, page 21. Though Eichel and McDavid were the prizes of the 2015 NHL draft class, it turns out the rest of the group featured quite a few stars worth tanking for. Mikko Rantanen, Colorado Avalanche. The 10th pick, Rantanen burst onto the scene as a rookie in 2016-2017, scoring 20 goals. He has gotten increasingly better since then, scoring 84 points and in 81 games last season, and is on track to blow past that point total this year. The Finnish sniper has powered Colorado's lethal offense all season. Thomas Chabot, Ottawa Senators. Just 21, Chabot has established himself as one of the league's top offensive defensemen. The 18th pick in the 2015 entered the All-Star break, leading all blue liners in goals. As a rookie in 2017-2018, Chabot scored 9 goals in just 63 games. He has already passed that number and is poised for a whole lot more. And finally, Matthew Barzal, New York Islanders. Barzal, the 16th pick, won the Calder Trophy last season as the league's best rookie. The speedy center scored 22 goals and had 85 points. This season, despite playing without former teammates John Tavares and Barzal, 21, is having another great year and was named to his first All-Star game. Introducing the Seattle Blank. Well, the December Seattle was awarded an NHL expansion franchise that will begin play in 2017. 2021. The team has just about everything it needs, including plans for a sparkling home rink and a rabid fan base. A season ticket drive received 10,000 orders in the first 12 minutes. Now it just needs a name and a logo. Our Pictures. The Seattle Our Pitches. The Seattle Evergreens. Washington State is known for its evergreen trees, which stay nice and green throughout the year. The tree thrives in the unpredictable climate of Washington, which is known for the amount of rain it receives. That's the kind of resilience you want to see in a hockey team, which makes this a fitting nickname for the squad. The Seattle Cascades. Seattle is the Emerald City, so we thought green should feature predominantly in the logo and jersey. For our first option, we chose to honor the Cascade Mountains, which provide a beautiful backdrop to the city. Naming a team after a mountain range is not unprecedented. Before they moved to New Jersey, the Devils played in Colorado and were called the Rockies. The Seattle Kraken. There's a 600-pound octopus that lives underneath the Narrows Bridge in nearby Tacoma. Well, at least according to area folklore, there is. Dubbed King Octopus by the locals, this mythical creature might not exist, but the giant Pacific octopus species does live in Puget Sound. It can weigh up to 110 pounds and can grow as big as 16 feet. Now it's your turn. Now that we've given you our names and designs, it's time for you to take a crack at creating a jersey for Seattle's NHL team. You can use Seattle-centric themes such as landmarks, the Space Needle, or animals, sea lions, or you can go in a whole different direction. Draw yours and then send it to us. The most creative entries will appear in the future issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Send your design by April 1, 2019 to Sports Illustrated Kids, 225 Liberty Street, 7th floor, New York, New York, 10281. The truth is out there. Page 24. Looks like, basketball, boxing. Sports outcomes can be hard to accept, so fans elaborate conspiracy theories about how their favorite athletes or teams were wronged by outside forces. The crazy thing, they might be right. The would-be Kings. In May 31st, 2002, the Sacramento Kings had a chance to derail the Lakers' three-peat. Sacramento had won Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals against L.A. 92-91, giving them a 3-2 series lead. They led 56-51 at halftime of Game 6, but the Lakers came back and won, thanks to 40 free-throw attempts, 27 of which came in the fourth quarter. Frustrated fans believed that the league rigged the game in favor of the popular Lakers dynasty. Then, in 2008, likelihood, disgraced former NBA referee Tim Donaghy, who went to prison for betting on games he officiated, alleged that he had heard from one of the involved refs that they wanted to extend the series to 7 games. The league and the referee union questioned Donaghy's credibility, but the group clearly believed him, the players from the Kings team. Center Scott Pollard and forward Chris Webber, among others, have publicly supported the theory. Muhammad Ali and Sonny Liston fought for the title of World Heavyweight Champion on May 25, 1965. 15 months earlier, Ali, then Cassius Clay, had beaten Liston when the older fighter had refused to leave his corner for the 7th round. The rematch ended, and much more quickly, too quickly for many. In the 1st round, Liston went down after an overhand right, which many viewers did not see connect. The crowd chanted, "Fake! Fake!" while Ali yelled, "Get up and fight, sucker! Get up and fight!" Speculation began that Liston had thrown the bout as part of a gambling fix. Sports Illustrated writer Mark Cram claimed Liston eventually admitted that he took a dive, but slow-motion video and photos from the fight suggest Ali's glove did find Liston's chin. The Black Sox. Players on the 1919 Chicago White Sox participated in the most infamous conspiracy in sports history. An effort to rig the World Series, but a conspiracy theory is different than a plain old conspiracy. The scheme definitely took place. What's disputed is the guilt of the most famous of the Black Sox, Shoeless Joe Jackson. Even though Jackson's testimony to a grand jury in 1920 broke the scandal wide open, his culpability has since been doubted. The other players admitted that Jackson, who was banned from baseball for life, never met with the shady characters who arranged the fix. And Jackson himself claimed that a team lawyer coerced him into signing a confession he didn't fully understand. Jackson could not read. Perhaps the most compelling defense for Jackson were his 375 batting average and 1,000 fielding percentage in the series. Not exactly the performance of a guy trying to lose. The frozen envelope. To discourage tanking, the NBA instituted the draft lottery in 1985. The seven teams that missed the playoffs that season would have an equal shot at nabbing Georgetown center Patrick Ewing, already a household name thanks to his March Madness exploits. Seven oversized envelopes were carefully placed in a large plastic tub, except for envelope number four, which was banged into the side of the container. Commissioner David Stern, below left, then pulled out an envelope with the bent corner, containing the Knicks logo, placing an instant superstar in the league's biggest media market seemed too convenient. Was the corner of the Knicks envelope creased on purpose? Or, as others have speculated, was it frozen, making it easy for Stern to identify by touch? Just be prepared for a lot of cold envelope jokes if the Knicks get Zion Williamson this year. Poster face-off. Before that, we'll go to communities and schools. In schools to unlock potential. At the beginning of his freshman year, Jalen's ambition wavered. He lost sight of the goals and found himself straying from his path. Toriano from Communities and Schools became his trusted guide, working with Jalen to improve his attendance, raise his GPA, and set clear goals for the future. Now a senior, Jalen is first chair trombone player and drum major in his high school marching band. He is exploring musical scholarship opportunities for college, and he has dreams of becoming a United States Marshal. There are millions of at-risk kids like Jalen who need a caring adult to help them stay in school and succeed in life. See how we help all kids succeed. CommunitiesInSchool.org. Now it's time for Poster Face-Off, page 26. This month we have Paul George, Oklahoma City Thunder forward, and Trevor Lawrence, Clemson Tigers quarterback. Paul George, age 28. Trevor Lawrence, 19. Height and weight, Paul George, 6'9", 220 pounds. Trevor Lawrence, 6'6", 215 pounds. Hometown, Palmdale, California for Paul George. Cartersville, Georgia, Trevor Lawrence. Nickname, Paul George. PG-13 for his initials and his jersey number. For Trevor Lawrence, Sunshine. Lawrence's Clemson teammates started calling him that because of his resemblance to the long-haired character Ronnie Sunshine Bass in the movie Remember the Titans. About that number, Paul George used to wear 24 in honor of Kobe Bryant. George switched to 13 in 2014. He bought up all the number 24 jerseys still on the market and sent them to his high school. Trevor Lawrence wears 16 because of Peyton Manning. Recruited by Russell Westbrook in 2017-18, his first season with the Thunder, George was recruited hard by Russell Westbrook. It worked. Last summer in free agency, George, who was expected to sign with a West Coast team, picked the Thunder instead. Well, just everybody, by everyone. The most sought-after quarterback in his class, Lawrence was even hounded by fans. One time he was eating in a restaurant in Louisiana. A man in a car noticed him through the window. He stopped, went inside the restaurant, and begged Lawrence to choose LSU. And quick, a cluck, cluck. Paul George has tweeted about his love for Roscoe's House of Chicken and Waffles, a California chain. Because of his love for Roscoe's, when George is re-signed with the Thunder, the club threw him a party where they serve fried chicken. And Trevor Lawrence studies film on his computer at Chick-fil-A. After the national championship game, Lawrence learned that Clemson's post-game meal was from the restaurant. Now we're getting the Chick-fil-A, too. He said, we can't lose tonight. Career highlights. Starting first with Trevor Lawrence. 2018, Lawrence came off the bench to throw for three touchdowns in his first career game, a rout of Furman. He took over the starting role in the fifth game of the season and led Clemson to the national title. In the championship game, Lawrence burned Alabama for 347 yards, three TDs, and a 44-16 win. 2017, as a senior at Carterville, Georgia High, Lawrence was the consensus number one player in the country. He threw for 3,396 yards and 41 touchdowns. He also broke Georgia High School career record for yards, 13,908, and TD passes, 161. Both marks have been held by Houston Texans star Deshaun Watson. He finished his career at Cartersville with a 52-2 record. In 2016, in his junior season, Lawrence threw for 3,904 yards and 51 touchdowns as Cartersville went 15-0 and won the state championship. In December, he committed to Clemson. Paul George, highlights, forward Oklahoma City Thunder, career highlights. 2018-2019, prior to the season, George, who was expected to choose the Los Angeles team in free agency, signed an extension with Oklahoma City. George had been traded to the Thunder by the Pacers in the summer of 2017. Through his first 39 games of the 2018-19 season, George was averaging 26.8 points per game, the best mark of his career. 2012-2013, George broke out in his third season with the Pacers. He made his first All-Star team and was named third-team All-NBA. He won the league's Most Improved Player award after raising his scoring average from 12 to 17.4 points per game. 2009-2010, as a sophomore at Fresno State, George averaged 16.8 points per game, 7.2 rebounds per game. Following the season, the Pacers took him with the 10th pick for the 2010 draft. We've run out of the time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138.